You're listening to an American Free Press podcast. Hello and welcome. Joining me on the phone is Fahim Darab. He's the spokesperson for the Washington, D.C. Al-Quds Committee, who are promoting Al-Quds Day. Fahim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Fahim, what is Al-Quds?
Al-Quds is an Arabic term, and it means the holy or the Holy Land. And what it's referring to is Jerusalem and the area around Jerusalem.
Okay. And Al-Quds Day. What is Al-Quds Day?
Yes, Al-Quds Day, it's an annual event where people across the world in different cities and including the United States get together, gather together, and we basically express our support for those being oppressed, whether it's people in different parts of the world, but particularly in Palestine. We voice our support for those people, and we also voice our opposition to the policies and the people that are treating them incorrectly.
Okay.
So it's really a gathering that happens each and every year.
How did Al-Quds Day begin?
Al-Quds Day started around 30 years ago. Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, called for this day for Muslims around the world to join their voices together in opposition to the Zionist Israeli policies and to support our Muslim brothers and sisters in Palestine or in other places in the world where there's some form of injustice going on. And so he, I think, was able to see that this time of the year, the month of Ramadan, is sort of a very opportune time for Muslims to express themselves and join together in this way.
Okay, and you mentioned Ramadan. Can you explain for our listeners exactly what is Ramadan?
Ramadan is a month in the Muslim calendar. Muslims around the world, for 1 month out of the year, they fast during daylight hours. They fast from food and drink, and they spend this time seeking spiritual improvement. They're seeking to remove whatever desires they might have and replace them with the order of their Creator. This is a month for Muslims where you'll be praying a lot more than usual. You'll be fasting. You'll be in a heightened state of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Al-Quds Day, then, since approximately, as you said, about 30 years ago, Al-Quds Day always takes place at the end of Ramadan, the end of the fasting.
It's usually the last Friday during the month of Ramadan. That's traditionally when it has been. Friday is the Sabbath for the Muslims. That's when we get together and we hold our congregational prayers. In particular, the last Friday, the last portion of the month of Ramadan, is when Muslims, as we're hopefully seeking this spiritual awareness, you know, reaching these higher levels, towards the end of the month is when these activities become more pronounced. And so the last Friday of the month of Ramadan is usually when we hold these Al-Quds Day gatherings. Although I think there are some other, you know, it's not really, nothing's set in stone. So some groups, like I know that in the UK and London, they gather on the last Saturday of the month of Ramadan. I guess you could theoretically hold gatherings outside of the month of Ramadan. But traditionally, usually it's been the last Friday of the month of Ramadan.
Okay, and on your website, which is alqudsday.org, and that's alqudsday.org, on the About tab, it says, International Day of Al-Quds is an annual event opposing Israel's control of Jerusalem. Anti-Zionist demonstrations are held on this day in most Muslim and Arab countries and by Muslim and non-Muslim communities around the world, including the United States. It is held each year on the last Friday of Ramadan. Jerusalem Day is not an Islamic religious holiday, but a political event open to both Muslims and non-Muslims alike. Is it also called Jerusalem Day because Al-Quds means Jerusalem?
Right. We do tend to sort of advertise more to the Muslim community, But we do also advertise to the non-Muslim community as well, anyone interested in equal rights for the Palestinians. So whether you come from a Muslim background or a Christian or Jewish background or a plain old human rights, you know, perspective, we're open to anyone joining us in these gatherings.
Again, on the website, it says that Al-Quds Day is a day of solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians in their struggle against the Zionist apartheid system of Israel. Al-Quds Day also extends beyond Palestine to support all oppressed people in their struggle across the world. Now, does it support all oppressed people or just all Muslims?
It's all oppressed people. As I'm sure you're aware, even if we go to the example of Palestine, a number of Palestinians are actually Christian. So we're not in focusing our attention on Muslims. We really are supporting equal rights and justice for Muslims or non-Muslims.
Right. So anybody who is being oppressed, this day is meant to draw attention to those folks. It just so happens that Palestinians are in the position where they're openly oppressed and they're in open-air concentration camps and prisons and being abused and tortured in so many ways. So I guess that's why you say that it was meant to really draw attention to the Palestinians first and foremost. Is that right?
Correct. And also, you know, Jerusalem is a holy city for the Jewish faith, for the Christian faith, and for the Muslim faith. So this is an area that's incredibly important to the majority of the world's religions. It's been politically sort of at the center of a lot of international activity, but it's also these different religious groups hold that area in very high and important regard.
And this Friday, September 3rd in Washington, D.C., at the DuPont Circle, there's going to be a rally. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Sure. So on September 3rd, which is a Friday at 11 a.m., we'll be gathering in DuPont Circle, which is in downtown D.C. at the intersections of Massachusetts and Connecticut Avenues. We'll be gathering. We'll bring together various speakers for this Al-Quds Day rally. We invite Muslims and non-Muslims alike to come participate. And these our invited speakers, they have different backgrounds, but they all share this desire for seeking justice in Palestine and in Jerusalem. So some of the speakers we plan to have are some rabbis coming from New York. So they're coming from the Jewish scriptural perspective. They'll be talking about the Torah and what the Torah says about Zionism. We also have invited, in years past, reverends from churches, and they come from the perspective of the Bible and what does the Bible say about Zionism. We also plan to have this year a Christian anti-Zionist person. He leads a group, a national group, that pickets outside of these mega churches, where these mega churches, they drum up support at the grassroots levels among Christians for support of the Israeli military actions and policies. And then, of course, we have, you know, Muslim speakers, imams of masjids, and plan to have poets and spoken word artists and people coming from various different backgrounds, human rights activists, anti-war activists. We have also invited some national groups that are very active in the anti-war movement. So we're seeking to bring together people from various different backgrounds who, of course, share the same desire for justice and ultimately peace in this area of the world.
Right. I don't imagine you're getting much mainstream press coverage.
No, I think we are a small group, and so we're sort of still in the process of getting organized. There's a certain amount of work that's involved if you want to market or if you want to publicize an event. But I think it's fair to say that, right, we have in years past notified some of the larger news organizations in the D.C. area, and it's kind of tough to get coverage from those groups.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder why.
There's also a lot going on in D.C. as well, but really, right, if we're calling attention to Israeli crimes, many of the mainstream media sources don't want to hear that.
Right. So. And there's a reason for that, of course.
Right.
Yeah. So you said it starts at 11?
Yes, starts at 11, maybe around 11:30 or so we'll have our speakers begin. We have, at this point, six confirmed speakers. And then after we have these speakers share their ideas and thoughts. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention.
Okay.
We also have Edward Peck. He's a former U.S. ambassador, and more recently he is a survivor of the Gaza flotilla attacks. So he'll be able to share his experiences, you know, on the flotilla and maybe his different, we'll have his viewpoint.
Sure, sure. He's a very eloquent speaker.
Right. So that's someone I forgot to mention. So after we have our speakers share their thoughts and experiences, what we'll do, we plan on distributing a very simple resource for the participants. This resource is to allow and encourage participation in a consumer boycott of various companies that support Israeli apartheid.
Right, I want to get to that in a few minutes. I just wanted to bring up the point that it's not just in Washington, D.C., is it, Fahim?
Correct. There are...
In the United States, at least, I mean.
Correct. There are a number of cities across the U.S., actually across North America, including Canada. There are a number of cities that are hosting these sorts of gatherings. I know that there are at least half a dozen to a dozen gatherings across the U.S., whether it's Seattle or Chicago, Dallas, Toronto. There are a number of people that are active organizing these events in different parts of the country.
Right. I see it on your website here. Seattle, Houston, St. Louis, Detroit, Dallas, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Plus, as you said, in Canada and, of course, internationally. So you're going to be handing out, you said earlier, some magnets that have something to do with the BDS movement. And, of course, that's the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction movement, similar to the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction movement that was carried out against the apartheid regime of South Africa. Is that right?
That is correct.
So tell our listeners about what does the Washington, D.C. Al-Quds Committee have to do with the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, the BDS movement?
Okay. Well, the main focus of our Al-Quds Day gatherings, these events, is to educate people and to invigorate them for action throughout the rest of the year. These gatherings usually are just a one-day event. There's 364 days left in the year. What are we going to do in those days? So what we hope to do with these gatherings is to provide information and resources for people to be active throughout the year. And one of these aspects of being active throughout the year is a consumer boycott of companies that support Israeli apartheid. So we plan, just like last year, to hand out magnets, these boycott magnets that are seeking to promote a consumer boycott of companies, whether American, Israeli, European, whatever the case may be, but companies that support Israeli apartheid. We recognize that there is a larger BDS movement, as you mentioned, that's an international movement. And so our small little part, we're not formally part of that group, but we support their aims and we support, in particular, the boycott portion of their work. And so we're promoting this consumer boycott with these resources, and we really think that that's the way to go. That's one of the major actions that people around the world can take in support of their Palestinian brothers and sisters, and that is to just control where your dollars go. That's a very fundamental thing that we should be doing. We should be aware of where our dollars go when we spend them, you know, in a grocery store or at the electronics store or wherever we might be. And I think that's something that it is, the BDS movement is, as you said, it is modeled on the successful South African boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. And actually, at our rally last year, one of the speakers, Reverend Graylin Hagler, who's a Christian reverend, he was going over some stories from when he was active in the 1980s as part of the BDS movement against South African apartheid. And so he shared some stories then, and he was encouraging us that, you know, this is something that really, it'll have an effect, a positive effect, in the same way that the boycotts and divestment and sanctions movement did for South Africa during apartheid. This is a way to really get people's attention. When you start hitting their pocketbooks, they really pick their heads up and they start taking notice.
Right.
One thing to talk about things, but when you start putting your dollars or not putting your dollars in a certain place, that really is effective. And so this is something that we definitely like to focus on in terms of what we're going to be doing in the other 364 days of the year.
Right. Very smart. So really the main purpose, as you said, of Al-Quds Day is to draw attention to what you can do for the rest of the year. And what you want folks to do is to pay attention to the B part of the BDS movement, and that's the boycott part. And on your website, you have actually the magnet that we're talking about. And it says boycott American companies that support Israeli apartheid. And I just want to make a very important point that we spoke of prior to the interview. You're talking about boycotting Israeli apartheid. You're talking about directing your energies towards Zionists, not towards all Jews. Is that right?
Correct. We, of course, make a distinction between someone that supports the Zionist ideology, which is a political ideology. It's an ideology of exclusion, of apartheid, of injustice. We make a distinction between Zionists and then, of course, Jews. We have had in past years, and this year we're planning to have Jewish speakers that also speak out against Zionism. So that is definitely a distinction that we do make.
Okay, and you personally, nor anyone in your group, you wouldn't consider yourself to be anti-Semitic?
No, not at all. I don't even know. Anti-Semitic, what does that mean? If I'm an Arab, can I be anti-Semitic? But no, I wouldn't consider myself anti-Semitic.
Right, I know. It's actually a misnomer, but it's gained popular following. So I like to ask that question to a lot of people. Getting back to the magnet, boycott American companies that support Israeli apartheid, and three companies that you mentioned, three prominent U.S. companies, Starbucks, McDonald's, and Coca-Cola, and visitors to your website, alqudsday.org. That's, again, alqudsday.org. You can go onto the website and read about each of these companies, how they support Israeli apartheid. And I always asked, well, hey, do these things work? Do these boycotts work? And here, right on the magnet, it says, yes, they do work. Tell our listeners about how it worked against McDonald's.
Okay. Well, I guess first let me take a quick step back.
Sure, please.
As we mentioned, we're modeling this boycott on the successful South African boycott. We have a very clear and very recent successful model to follow. And so in terms of success, we just have to look 20 years before us that it was very successful against apartheid in South Africa. And now we have apartheid in Israel. And so you mentioned McDonald's. There are several ways to measure success. Let me just actually take a step back. First, the boycott, it's got two aims, really. The first aim is actually to benefit not the companies that don't participate in apartheid and to punish the companies that do participate in, you know, supporting Israeli apartheid. It's really to create an awareness in the person that is participating in a boycott. So if I'm a Muslim or a Christian or a Jew or whatever, I'm an American that's taking part in this boycott, I get one of these refrigerator magnets, I slap it on the fridge. Every day I walk by that fridge, I have a daily reminder right in my face, several times a day, of what's going on over there and the crimes some of these companies are complicit in. So I'm thinking about this on a daily basis. When I go to the grocery store or when I'm driving down the road and I'm driving by, I see a McDonald's sign or a Starbucks sign, I have these thoughts in my head. I remember, I'm aware. So I'm constantly remembering and reflecting, and I'm able to be a thinking person. And so that's the primary aim, actually, is number one, is to help the people that are participating in the boycott to become more aware and to think about these sorts of things on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Now, the secondary aspect of it is the material benefits or the material success of this boycott, which there are material successes of the boycott. So on our little magnet, we do sort of have some questions answered, like, does the boycott work? And you mentioned McDonald's. It is a company that supports Israeli apartheid through various means. Like, one of those, for instance, is supporting a group, the Jewish United Fund. McDonald's is a major corporate partner of this Jewish United Fund. And this group provides American military, economic, well, they work to maintain American military, economic, and diplomatic support for Israel. And they run family missions to Israel where families get to visit army bases and meet with Israeli soldiers. Ooh, sounds fun.
Oh, yeah. Does Ronald McDonald go along for the ride?
Right.
Yeah.
They also provide millions of dollars, this organization, the Jewish United Fund, to support Israeli settlements built on destroyed Palestinian villages. Illegal Israeli settlements built on destroyed villages that used to have Palestinians living in them. Now they're destroyed. They built settlements on top of them. Right. So when I go to McDonald's, you know, I'm thinking about a destroyed village and fun-filled family vacations to meet Israeli soldiers, maintaining American military, economic, and diplomatic support for Israel. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about those things rather than, you know, a Big Mac or a fish sandwich. Mm-hmm. So one of the successes that we can point to is that McDonald's, they're, of course, popular around the world, and they're popular in the Middle East. Since the launch of the boycott, boycott. This boycott really began more than almost 10 years ago, maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Okay.
And it's an international boycott. We're just a very small local part of that. Dozens and dozens of McDonald's closed due to this boycott, or they tried to rebrand the McDonald's stores in these different countries with different names, but those failed. Actually, hundreds of different McDonald's stores in the Middle East where this boycott is a little bit more pronounced, hundreds of outlets had to close.
Mm-hmm.
And then also another indicator of the success of the boycott, it's kind of difficult to sort of track the material, you know, gains and losses or the successes of boycotts because it's very nature, it's very sort of dispersed, and so that makes it difficult to track. But another indicator of the boycott success is when you go to these companies' websites, McDonald's or Starbucks, you would have references on their websites, very proud references, say, we support, for instance, the Jewish United Fund. We're a corporate partner of the Jewish United Fund. And, you know, they go into that. You know, we've given this amount or that amount. We've given this award or that award. And then you go to the Jewish United Fund's website, and they, too, very proudly display that McDonald's is a major corporate supporter of our group, and they help to fund X, Y, Z. All of these references that are very proud and public, those have been removed.
Mm-hmm.
So these websites, they're removing all of this information, any sort of connection to these sorts of groups, and these groups, their connections, their corporate sponsors, they're all removing that information. You can look at different websites that have done the research and done screen grabs and screen captures and things like that of the websites before they were edited. You can see all this information proudly displayed. Now they're actually hiding that information. So they're hiding. They're afraid that, you know what, we don't want to have some sort of a proud connection to Israeli apartheid. We want to hide that because they realize the effectiveness of this boycott, that it's spreading. And so they're afraid. They don't want to become a target of this boycott.
Right.
And they recognize that in the same way that South African apartheid was really hammered through these boycotts and divestment and sanctions, I think they see the writing on the wall. They see the same thing is going to be happening. It is happening, and it's going to be happening with Israeli apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really afraid to display any sort of connection.
That's great. That's terrific. And of course, you need the help of ordinary everyday people. And I can tell you right now that just from studying your website and showing who is participating in the Israeli apartheid disaster, the movement, Starbucks, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, I personally am going to boycott them. So I guess that's where it has to start. It has to start where somebody becomes aware of it, like you said, and then they take the action. And I personally am going to take the action. I don't drink Starbucks coffee, but I rarely have McDonald's. And I rarely have Coke, but now I'm going to make it a point of not having them until the Zionist Israeli apartheid system is dismantled, just like, as you said, South Africa was. Are there other companies besides Starbucks, McDonald's, and Coca-Cola?
Yes. Well, first, I applaud. Obviously, you're doing it for a very high reason, but it doesn't need applaud, but I still applaud your decision to do that because it's definitely something that it's more difficult to participate in a boycott than to not do that. So I really applaud that.
Thank you.
Now, in terms of other companies, right, on our website, the little magnet resource that we have posted, which although it is very extremely grassroots, it's, you know, an individual or a family's purchasing, it's still an important resource, we think. At the very top of that resource, we have the website from which we gathered the various pieces of information, the basically the crimes of these three different companies, Starbucks, McDonald's, and Coca-Cola. This inminds.co.uk website, they're a good resource. They've done a lot of research on dozens of companies, hundreds of brands, where they've looked into how these companies are connected to the Israeli regime, how they're connected to supporting the Israeli apartheid economically.
Mm-hmm.
And so we pulled out a few companies, just three companies from that website, although the company lists dozens and dozens of companies, because these companies are the three sort of some of the most well-known American companies
mm-hmm.
that you'll find on any corner, a Starbucks, a McDonald's, you'll find a Coke in almost any restaurant or vending machine.
Right.
So we really wanted to focus, since we're based in the United States and we wanted to focus people on just these three companies, which of course these three companies have several dozen brands underneath them,
sure.
But we wanted to focus people just on these three companies to make it easier.
Right, so here it is, folks. There's three companies for you, Starbucks, McDonald's, Coca-Cola. It's not only going to save you some money, because who wants to pay $4 or however much it is for a Starbucks coffee, but you're going to be helping to dismantle this very evil system that is being supported by probably your friends and neighbors. Definitely your friends and neighbors, because people are buying Starbucks and McDonald's and Coca-Cola without knowing where the money's going. And these are the three companies that my guest's organization wants to focus on. If you want to see what other companies are intertwined with the Zionist apartheid system, you can visit www.inminds.co.uk, and that's INMINDS.co.uk.
And that organization, we don't have any affiliation with them, but I mean, we've been aware of that website and their work for years, and we recognize how much research they've actually put in. They have all this information and resources about these different companies, so decided to basically advertise and point people towards that website if they want even more information about various companies. So, the InMinds website is definitely a good resource.
Great. Excellent. I just wanted to bring up the point we're talking about, the BDS movement. And most folks they certainly would be shocked to hear that their own government, the United States government, has laws on the books that prevents people and companies from finding out where certain parts of products are manufactured. And the U.S. Department of Commerce, the Bureau of Industry and Security, they have some laws on the books that were in direct relation to the Arab boycott against Israel. I believe that began in 1973, to prevent folks from finding out if any parts are made in Israel. So in other words, if I'm in France and I want to buy a machine part in Missouri, I call up the company. I cannot ask them, are any of those parts in that product I want to buy made in Israel? Then if the company tells the person in France, they can be fined. So it's not just going against Starbucks or McDonald's or Coca-Cola. That's important. You got to do your part, and it works, as Fahim pointed out very clearly. But you're up against also your own government, because the Zionist entities that are committing the atrocities in the stolen lands of Palestine, bulldozing the homes and causing untold misery for hundreds of thousands of people and millions of people throughout the world who sympathize with the Palestinians. They also have their tentacles here, dug very deeply in the United States government, and they are the masterminds of these laws that are against human rights in the world and against the better interests of people, not just in the United States, but across the planet. I wanted to bring that out for him because that's very important that we have here in the United States a law that prevents folks from finding out where parts were made.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's an important issue to point out because it removes ethics from business practices. If you can't ask these sorts of questions, you're right. It does indicate how deeply the Zionists have their sort of grasp around even our, the laws and even our businesses now, where, you can't ask these sorts of questions. I mean, if it's my business, I should be able to ask that question. What does that have to do? Ask a question about a foreign government?
Right, exactly. You always have to be suspicious when there are laws on the books that prevent you from voicing your opinion or not thinking it, but actually voicing it, like Holocaust denial laws. Not in the United States yet, but in, I think, 13 countries across the planet where you cannot question the official sanctioned version of the Holocaust. If you say, I don't think it was 6 million people, I think it was 2 million, you could go to jail. And of course, there are people in jail for that. You can think it, but you can't voice it. And this is something very similar. You can think that, gee, there might be a component in that product I want to buy that's made in Israel, but I can't ask them.
Those types of laws are definitely red flags immediately. Like, we should think, wait, what is this? Doesn't sound right. This doesn't pass the smell test. It immediately just brings a bunch of questions to mind. Doesn't make any sense for American businesses or for American consumers. It doesn't make sense. Of course, it makes sense for the Israeli government. It makes sense for them.
Right, exactly. And this is something that needs to be broken also, this law, because this is keeping the illegal Zionist apartheid regime in power. And that website is, if anybody's interested in the U.S. Department of Commerce and this Bureau of Industry and Security, that website is www.bis.doc.gov. That's bis.doc.gov. And that will bring you right to the Bureau of Industry and Security. And of course, DOC stands for Department of Commerce. Fahim, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent. I know that this is the holy month of Ramadan for you, and I guess you didn't eat the whole day, and you just recently had some food, right? And
now I was able to have a few dates and a little bit of soup. So.
Good, excellent. Now, I want to remind our listeners that Friday, September 3rd, the International Day of Quds, in solidarity with the oppressed of the world, in Washington, D.C., at 11 o'clock at the DuPont Circle, from 11 till, it looks like, about 1:30, is that right?
Yeah, around that time.
Okay, and I'm sure people are going to be gathering prior and after that. Looks like half a dozen cities across the United States on the same day this is going to be happening, right?
Right. The website, alquds.org, it has information about gatherings in, right, 6 or 7 or 8 different cities across the U.S. and one in Toronto. But it also has information specific to the Washington, D.C. gathering.
Okay. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area or Seattle or New York or Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, Houston, St. Louis, or Toronto, and you're interested in learning more about Al-Quds Day and what we've been talking about here, and you want to actually attend the event, pick up your magnet and learn about the boycott part of the BDS movement, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction movement, which really, as Fahim was explaining, really is effective, then show up. It's Friday. Perhaps you could, if you're working, you could take an early lunch, take a walk down to the DuPont Circle and show your support. Fahim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to explain to our listeners about Al-Quds Day. Very fascinating. And is there anything you want to say in closing?
I wanted to thank you for having me as your guest, Dave. And like you said, if you're interested, please join us. You're welcome to join, whether you're Muslim, Christian, Jewish, no faith. Come on out, and we can provide you with some resources, hopefully, and maybe inspire and invigorate action and thought for the rest of the year.
Sounds great, Fahim. Thanks again. Appreciate it. Best of luck. And I'm going to try to make it down there in D.C. on Friday.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Fahim.
Bye-bye.